Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 14B of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. Today we have a special edition of the show. Matt Summer, John Mayo, and Wayne Cordova, the Geek Passer, join me as we focus entirely on the delays in Marvel Civil War. Will we have to wait forever to find out the North wins again, or will Miller shock us all with a South victory? Only time will tell. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to a special edition of Comic Timing. This is episode 14B of Comic Timing. Don't want to make it episode 15, because episode 15 is going to be kind of special. It's going to be our first ever 22 pages, which will come out next week. But until then, I want to introduce the panel here for you. And first off, he is, if Hank Hill were to exist in real life, he would be Matt Summer.
Thank you.
Welcome to the show, Matt.
All right, good to be here.
Glad to have you. And joining us for the first time on Comic Timing, but he has joined me once before for an episode of Geek Speak, he is the Mayo Report himself. He is John Mayo. John, what's going on?
Not too much. How about you?
Doing pretty well over here. Doing pretty well. It's not too hot tonight, so having the fan off for the recording is not killing me, so amen to that.
Cool.
And joining us as well is the Geek Pastor himself, Wayne Cordova. What's going on, Wayne?
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well over here.
Thanks for having me.
We're glad to have you, buddy, and we're glad to be your first test of the mic after getting it out of storage.
Yeah, I know. We might need you here, Pastor, you know, to talk people down off the ledge.
I'm on the ledge with them, man. That's
if this doesn't call for divine intervention, I don't know what does. I mean, geez.
Exactly.
We'll start humming this Smallville theme song any second now. Somebody save me. Oh, God. Anyway, what we're talking about here on today's show is the announcement that came out of Marvel this past week that Civil War is being delayed up to at least a month. I say at least a month because when was the last time that delays actually stuck to just how long they said they were going to? I hope that's the case here. Let me give you the story first for the three of you who haven't actually found out about this yet, who listen to Comic Timing. Civil what, exactly. That was Abraham Lincoln and the North and the South and all that.
This is the follow-up to the 1602 stuff, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
This would be 1609, actually. Yeah. Let's get to the information. This came out of Newsarama.com literally the day before Civil War number 4 was going to hit, and that's something that we're definitely going to need to touch on once we actually get to it. In information released to comic book retailers this past Tuesday, Marvel has announced that issue number 4 and 5 of their hugely successful Civil War series are being delayed. Civil War number 4 and all its variant cover editions, wow, what a shock there, originally scheduled to be released tomorrow, and that was obviously this past Tuesday, so that was this past Wednesday, is now scheduled for September 20th. Issue number 5 and all its variants, originally scheduled for next month, is now scheduled for November 15th. You didn't hear that wrong, November 15th. And because of the nature of the storyline, the delays in the main series will affect the related and tie-in titles like Civil War Frontline. In the announcement, Marvel wrote, and I quote, "Over the next few weeks, the Civil War proper title and a few of the tie-in books that are closely related to the story in the main book will be shipping later than originally planned. In an attempt to accommodate the creative team of Mark You Say Millar, I Say Miller, and Steve McNiven, and keep the artistic integrity and high standards of the event, we will be shifting the following titles. Civil War number 4 moves to the 20th of September, obviously all of its variants. Fantastic Four number 540 also moves to the 20th of September. Civil War Frontline number 6 moves to the 27th of September, along with Amazing Spider-Man number 535. Frontline number 7 comes out on October 11th, and that is the only Civil War title coming out in October, which is kind of a bit slow there. Civil War number 5 hits on November 15th. Civil War Frontline number 8 hits on the 22nd, along with Punisher War Journal number 1, Fantastic Four number 541, Amazing Spider-Man number 536. And in December, you've got Civil War number 6, you've got Civil War Frontline number 9, Punisher War Journal number 2, and all those except for Punisher War Journal hit on the 20th of December. Punisher War Journal hits on December 28th. Civil War Frontline number 10 moves to January 4th. Amazing Spider-Man 537 moves to January 4th as well, along with Fantastic Four 542. Civil War 7 moves to 117. The price is not yet solicited, which is kind of interesting there. Amazing Spider-Man 538 is not yet solicited. Fantastic Four number 543 moves to 12407. And new additions to the Civil War checklist, Black Panther number 23 in December 2006. They're not even giving this a date. Civil War War Crimes in December, Black Panther 24 in January, and 25 in February, and Civil War Frontline number 11, which was not originally going to happen, but is now happening, is going to happen on February 11th of 2007. And also starting in November, some Marvel titles will be branded Casualties of War, similar to how they branded titles of Spider-Man Unmasked and Road to Civil War. Those titles are Moon Knight number 7 in December, Captain America Winter Soldier Special, Iron Man Captain America Special, where I believe they have a WWE wrestling match, and Moon Knight number 8. In January 2007, Blade number 5, and Moon Knight number 9. And that's the situation there, pretty much. And what they ended up saying is that they needed... The need for these shifts came about as the September for November shipping products, Marvel Previews number 37, was going to press.
As better watch what you say, man. Marvel's coming after you with the science.
Sorry, it's outside my house here.
Grand Theft Auto Civil War edition going on outside. Marvel Previews number 37 was going to press, and we were not able to make adjustments, reads Marvel's explanations to retailers. The December Marvel Previews will reflect the changes and addition. At this point, we do not anticipate further changes to the schedule. Now, that's pretty much the situation. Right after that, Mark Millar came out with a statement on August 16th at about 8:25 in the morning, and he said, "All I can say is that I'm as surprised by all this as you are. In fact, I only found out about it when I got up this morning and read my email. But you know what? This is a very cool thing for Marvel to do, because it would have been so much easier to just go for a cheap fill-in artist instead of pushing back the books. Steve has virtually no lead-in time on Civil War, and a title with a million characters has proven much tougher than he expected." Let me go to the end here. "This has been the biggest book of the millennium so far, and it's clear people are passionate about waiting, but honestly, it'll be worth it for 7 issues of pure McNiven." Now, first of all, has this been the miniseries of the millennium? Because I'm not entirely sure about that.
Well, I guess I should put myself out there, because I basically got eviscerated on an episode of Around Comics for saying that I didn't really care for Civil War number 1. And I'll put this out there right now. I'm not currently buying the series or the tie-ins. I gave it a shot, and you know, whether Millar buys his own hype and thinks his book is the best book ever, I don't know. All I can say is that it's obviously a success sales-wise for Marvel. That last issue sold something like 300,000 copies, which is pretty unheard of in this day and age. I mean, they're doing something right. People are interested in it for sure.
Well, let's talk to our number cruncher himself. I mean, John, how much do you think the sales are going to be affected by this delay?
Ooh, that's a tough question. I would say actually probably not all that much. And the reason I say that is, I mean, as Matt just mentioned, this thing is just selling through the roof. It's selling, you know, right at that 300,000 point for the second issue, once you factor in the reorders and stuff. And that's like twice, three times what any other, you know, successful, you know, series would be doing by and large. So, yeah, it may lose a few readers and stuff, but on the other hand, you know, more word of mouth, people are talking about it, and, you know, part of it also is Marvel has sold these issues already. The retailers have bought them, they just haven't gotten them yet. Now, the retailers may get stuck with some of them, so in that respect, it may not sell through as well as it will, or as quickly as it would, but even so, I expect it will.
Okay, well, I can sort of agree with you there also, because, well, just think of how many, you know, late titles have come out in the past that still sold pretty damn well. I mean, the Ultimate stories that Warren Ellis were coming out with, Ultimate Galactus and all that stuff, wasn't there like a 6-month delay in one of those titles, and it still sold as one of the best Ultimate titles of that particular month? So, I mean, Marvel does have a track record of, even though there are long delays on things, they still manage to get a decent amount of folks to pick it up.
Right, well, I mean, I would just imagine if you take a look at, you know, just plain orders, I don't know anybody who's going to actually take Civil War off their pull list because of this, you know, unless somebody's, you know, greatly outraged and they're just going to wait for the trade, which Marvel's still going to get their money anyway, and they're going to miss out on a good story. You know, so I mean, I'm not taking it off my list because it's late. Am I happy about it? No. But like, you know, like what John said is, you know, the shops are what they're going to get hit with it, because, you know, you got people who are the casual buyer that will only pick it up if they see it on the shelf, and if they don't see it on the shelf, they'll probably forget about it.
And, well, also, how about the fact that at this point, Joe Quesada was just on the Colbert Report about a week or so back. I believe it was actually 2 weeks ago. And, you know, there were actual, like, New York Times had articles on Civil War, and there was a really big hype machine behind Civil War. And I think we all know by now that the hype machine that occurs, at least here in the United States, and I'm sure this does happen, you know, to an extent abroad as well, that the hype machine dies out after a couple of weeks. And when you have a major delay like this, it's going to be hard to maybe garner up that same amount of attention that you had before the actual delay.
Well, you know what I think is, the one thing I think is kind of interesting about this is piecing through all these back and forth between, you know, Tom Brevoort and Miller and everybody else. I mean, it seems like they threw this whole event together kind of at the last minute. I'm sure they're probably more surprised than anybody else that it's actually selling as well as it is. And I don't know, you know, again, it's getting a lot of hype, but is this really drawing in new people from outside the comic industry? Is it just the same old people picking it up? You know, maybe the guy who only reads DC, well, now he's going over to check out, you know, what's going on over here. My biggest thing with this right now is, again, the casual fan and even the reader. I mean, you know, okay, it's delayed, so what? The reader isn't the one that's really getting hurt by this other than just having to wait around. The retailers are the ones that are getting screwed by this with a 24-hour notice, by the way, which seems ridiculous to me, especially when, like you said, Quesada's on in the paper at Wizard World Chicago 2 weeks ago. You know, they're in the Civil War panel. Everything's coming up roses, talking about how they're so great that everything's on time and on track. I mean, come on. They knew it was going to be late. They knew this for 24 hours before the ship date. I mean, I don't know. It seems like right now they're just backpedaling. They're trying to make excuses to cover for this.
Well, and like you said, the short notice is the part that's really puzzling. How could they not know this was going to be a problem? How come they didn't do the damage control sooner? And why were they really, you know, blindsiding the retailers on this?
Well, that's certainly the question there. And also, I mean, when you think about it, and this was brought up on a couple of the forums that I regularly frequent, and I believe it was on the Comic Geek Speak forums as well, the fact that Marvel usually, right off the bat after their conventions, usually put up their Marvel convention panels as a podcast. The Civil War panel from San Diego and the Civil War panel from Chicago did not go up, which sort of, at least to me, says a little bit that they certainly knew about this ahead of time, but because they said something entirely different in those panels, they didn't want to put them on the internet and make themselves even look like even bigger fools.
Well, one of the things that kind of bothers me is the fact that if this was any other book, you know, if this was anything else, you know, if it was Dan Slott or some other, you know, artist or something that was running late, they might lose their job. They might put in a sub for it, you know. But I think I just kind of think it's just kind of funny how it's perfectly fine and dandy because this is Civil War. This is Mark Miller. It's Steve McNiven who's the one who's basically needs the more time.
If I can jump in for a second, mentioning Dan Slott's kind of interesting because it wasn't all that long ago on, I think it was Newsarama, that Brevoort basically, you know, said, you know, hey, this guy's got a perfect track record. He's been late on everything he's done for Marvel since he became exclusive.
Right.
I mean, geez, talk about throwing somebody to the wolves.
Right under the bus.
the fact with Dan Slott is the fact that, if I remember correctly, Dan Slott actually has something that's going to be coming out after Civil War, which has now obviously been delayed because of the Civil War delay. So he's got to wait even farther to get his book out there.
This is the other thing that sucks, because a lot of people right now, I mean, we have creators and people that have nothing to do with this, like Hitch coming out of nowhere saying things like, well, you know, this is like on par with Dark Knight and Watchmen, and, you know, this is a modern classic, and you can't rush that. You can't put a crappy fill-in artist
and
in there.
And Hitch says it, you know, the master of the lateness himself.
Which adds a whole nother layer of irony to it. But you know what? I mean, part of the reason, again, why people are upset by this is, if Civil War was a standalone book, if it was a What If or an Elseworlds or something else, and it was late, it doesn't matter, really. I mean, yeah, you might be kind of pissed that it's late, but in the general scheme of things, who cares? But what we're seeing with this now is not just that book is late, but now other Marvel bestsellers, New Avengers, which is one of the better sellers in shops, you know, Spider-Man, another big seller, a lot of books that are big sellers are being skipped a month, and that means the retailers are going a month without getting that income that they should have had from these late books. It's pushing everything back. I mean, I don't know. Granted, it's not the 50th or anything, but, you know, this whole thing is delaying the actual celebration of the 45th anniversary of the Fantastic Four.
Yeah.
And I mean, come on. I just don't see how they get themselves into this stuff without having it planned out a little bit better.
Do you think they rushed this because of DC's success with Infinite Crisis in 52? Because obviously, they could have very well, you know, said, okay, fine, Steve McNiven is doing this. We love Steve McNiven. Mark Miller's doing this, or Millar, whatever, is doing this. And we want them to be able to do this continuously. We want them to be on it without any fill-ins. Let's give them an extra month or two before we put this out there, and then we'll start putting out Civil War. That way, when one issue comes out, we'll have another issue in the can. When one issue comes out, we'll have another issue in the can. Instead of that, from the looks of things here, this was first planned literally a month before it came out. And when that happens, you're waiting for delays to occur, because Brevoort himself just actually stated that it takes McNiven about 6 weeks to do a comic. Well, when you have 6 weeks to do a comic, and you're going out with a monthly book, and you started a month before the actual comic actually hit the stands, you're looking for trouble there.
Right, well, you're doomed from the get-go, and I mean, it's just a matter of, Marvel would go out of their way to tell you that Civil War has not come in retaliation to Infinite Crisis, but when you run into timing issues like this, it sure seems like it. I mean, because if you're going to take the time out to map out a story like this, if this is, you know, a Watchmen-level, you know, story, you know, if this is going to reach Dark Knight levels, you'd think they would have put a little bit more time and effort into it. I mean, so far, I've enjoyed it, but honestly, the issue that everyone's supposed to be talking about is now going to be late. You know, we had one surprise, without spoiling it, you know, at the end of issue 3, but apparently there's supposed to be more stuff coming out in issue 4, so I don't even feel like Civil War has quite hit the excitement level yet that we could have. So, I mean, as of right now, it's late, and I'm not really caring all that much because I'm not that wrapped up into the story.
Yeah, and also, the surprise that you're talking about at the end of issue 3, if anybody who was reading Fantastic Four knew this was coming anyway.
Right. Oh, I mean, just read the covers. I mean, it's like nowadays, I mean, you can just look at the cover and, you know that it's, you know, what's going to come at the end of the panel, which, the same thing, cover of, you know, issue 3 really ticked me off.
Yeah. Well, you know, again, I find this kind of interesting that, let's face it, Marvel and DC, they're playing against each other, and so right. was this plan to come out and interfere with IC and 52? You know, I don't know. They had some event that was planned, but I mean, I find that interesting reading these postings from, you know, Miller and Bendis saying, like, yeah, we were going with a totally different event, and then all of a sudden at the last minute we thought it sucked, and then we pitched Civil War. And that's fine, but I mean,
got this picture in my head of them all sitting around a bar, too, like, hey, you want to do this instead? Okay.
Yeah, this story sucks. I've got a better one. I'm Mark Millar.
That really bothers me because it seems like there's a certain desperation there of, oh, we've got to have something better, which is cool, and I'm all for better quality stories and stuff. But it also implies that they really haven't thought long-term on where things are going, what they want to do, you know, with the characters after they make these changes or whatnot. And they, in my opinion, seem to be writing themselves into certain corners and whatnot that, quite frankly, I'm not confident they can write their way out of.
Right, exactly. That was kind of my problem with the first issue when I was reading it, just thinking, you know, this is a universe-changing storyline. And if you actually think this through, I mean, at the end of this, you can't just hit the reset button and say, oh, okay, now no one remembers who Spider-Man is anymore.
Well, I think they're going to have to.
But the fans are going to go nuts. I can't imagine how they can.
Right. And you know, I agree with that, too.
I don't know. That's the thing. I don't know what they're going to do, and I don't really, I guess, trust them enough to make it work right now, I guess, based on this tracker.
Right. Well, and I think that's the case is that, you know, so far this is a story where I'm not quite sure where it's heading anyway. You know, Infinite Crisis without real, you know, whatever, we're going to compare them anyway. Infinite Crisis, you kind of, you know, hey, this is going to be an earth-shattering thing because, well, more Earths are popping up. And with, you know, with Civil War, you're going, okay, this looks like it's becoming a legal battle, you know, and then the only way to hit the reset button is, again, if you, I guess, what, Scarlet Witch comes out and says, you know, no more secret identities, you know, and this, and it all gets back. So it's like, okay, you're going to take something that, you know, starts off coming from Congress, and then it's going to become a mystical thing at the end. And, I mean, that's speculating, but it's just, I'm not hooked on the story yet. I don't know what's fully going on.
Well, yeah, they might pull, like, in The Simpsons, where they had the, you know, the judge decrees that we will never talk of this again.
And it's over.
It never happened.
Seriously, once Perry Mason guest stars, the whole thing really kicks into high gear. I mean,
pretty
come
much,
on.
Yeah. Well, actually, yeah.
I was rooting for Matt Murdock.
She-Hulk, Matt Murdock, and Perry Mason have a team-up.
Well, nice.
I'd buy that.
you know, you think Marvel would have learned from the experience DC just had with Infinite Crisis. They had some delays.
Right.
They got to where they had to do fill-in artists and stuff like that. And, you know, Infinite Crisis had to end when it ended. They couldn't really push that back, or they'd have to push everything back.
Yeah.
Why they didn't factor in more lead time, I'm sure there's internal politics and all kinds of stuff that we don't have visibility into, but it's, you know, it kind of breaks my faith in their ability to put out comics on a timely basis, particularly something that's so high profile.
Right. I could appreciate Steve McNiven wanting to stay as the artist, and even Marvel wanting to stick with him, because, you know, I'd like to see the same version of Cap throughout the whole thing and the same drawings and all that. But, I mean, if they're going to touch up Infinite Crisis when it comes out in trade, maybe they could do the same thing with Civil War. Because, I mean, when I get issue 4, I'm just going to breeze through it anyway just to be disappointed that I had to wait another month.
Yeah. That's what's kind of weird about this whole debate is the fact that we're making excuses now for how the monthly book comes out based on the someday trade paperback, which is so bizarre. Like, well, you know, people don't want fill-in artists, and so the trade, you know, we want the trade to be the nice way it is, and so we're going to just worry about that more than the monthlies. And I'm seeing a fun... I mean, this is really right now...
I don't think this is new, though.
Well, I think this level of it is new, saying that we're not going to do this book monthly because we're more worried about the trade than the actual monthly issue.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that.
I see where you're going from, but or coming from, whatever, but you look at where they set up story arcs to be a clear six-issue beginning, middle, and end, so it factors better in. They don't worry about introducing characters and plot lines and stuff like that in the middle chapter because, well, when you read it in a trade, who cares? I mean, yes, this takes it to a new level. I totally agree with that.
This seems to me like the whole hoo-ha and the justifications that have come out of Marvel Editorial are hitting on a lot of things that, again, fundamentally kind of changed the way that comics have been produced. You know, we have Brevoort saying things like, no one really cares, you know, people buy books for the creators now, they don't really buy books for the characters, so it doesn't matter if we have a fill-in because people don't, you know, they get upset. I mean, that's, I don't know, this something's changed. I think this is really signaling a big change in the industry, and maybe that's already been taking place. I don't know.
Well, I'll tell you this straight up. If it was a fill-in that was, I don't know, what's the word, good, you know, as opposed to just a random guy from Marvel's bullpen that just wasn't doing a project at the time, and they go to him and say, hey, can you fill in for Civil War? I mean, they're not going to pull an Igor Cordy with this. I mean, they're not going to make him come on in on New X-Men when you were getting Frank Quitely the entire time and say, hey, can you do this issue for you? Oh, by the way, Frank hasn't finished the other issue yet. Do you want to do that one? And that completely screwed up his art style because he literally had to finish a book in a week, okay? We know for certain that's not what was going to happen here. Had they just gotten another guy from their bullpen who was one of their top stars, I would have been happy with that, quite frankly.
Well, that's part of the problem, too, is, I mean, like I said, Brevoort's been saying, he's been trying to defend himself and his company and what's been going on, and I think that they just keep kind of digging themselves deeper into a hole. I almost wish that they would just shut up and just say, hey, we're sorry, we're working as hard as we can, and we'll get it out. But, I mean, we keep getting these things like, face it, fill-in artists suck.
Yep.
Well, they don't suck if you hire good people for fill-in artists, or if you arrange it so that it's an alternating issue, or I don't know.
I mean, it's not our fault that, you know, that fill-in artists suck, and I could just imagine if I was in Marvel's bullpen and I was a fill-in artist, I'd love the fact that my boss has full confidence in me to do a great job. I mean, I just think that maybe we have been too focused on the personality behind the book. You know, everybody wants to buy a Miller book, everybody wants to buy a Bendis book and stuff, but I mean, I still buy books based on characters, because I mean, I'm not going to buy, no matter how good, you know, a book is, I'm not going to buy it if I don't know who's in it, and I don't, you know, I don't like those characters, I don't have a vested interest in it. I think they could have stood to make some kind of changes with the lineup in Civil War if it meant coming out on time.
Well, and also at the same time, you just brought up a good point, but I'm gonna actually addend that to the point where if it's a title that I know absolutely nothing about and it's issue 30, that's one thing. If it's a title I know absolutely nothing about and it's issue 1,
right,
chances are I'll give it a shot. I mean, obviously, you know, Runaways and Young Avengers, both of which are part of Civil War, you know, were absolutely brand new concepts. with brand new characters nobody had ever really seen before, but they were really innovative and, you know, creative, and that's why I kept picking it up. At the same time, this is Civil War. This is supposed to be the big guns with all the characters that we know and love with brand new takes on them and brand new challenges for them. You got to keep this schedule up for that.
Yeah, I agree with that. Another big thing about this, you know, if they're working for the trade, you know, I really don't mind. The thing is, I'm not upset personally by this, and I really don't mind. And, you know, I think if they are doing a story and they want to keep it consistent, I don't have any problem with that, really. Just that the fact that they kind of seems like they slapped this event together from the beginning and just were, you know, I don't know what their hurry was, because, again, and there's a Newsarama interview where Matt Brady is talking to Tom Brevoort, and he says, well, why didn't you just delay it for 6 months? And Brevoort has some response like, well, then, you know, people are just having fill-in issues where they, you know, spitting their wheels and they can't do anything and change things. Well,
but, you know, stories.
Yeah, but that's my thing. I mean, look at a title like Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. I mean, they bring in Peter David to work on a Spider-Man title, and how many of those issues have been, like, crossover issues in his run? There's been, like, what, 11 issues, and, like, eight of them are crossover issues?
Actually, I think 12 of them were.
I mean, let these guys tell stories. I mean, Straczynski, I just read this, also was saying, you know, hey, you guys are screwing me on FF. I didn't come in here to write Civil War FF.
Yeah.
I came in here to write the FF. And you can't tell me that these guys could not have had 6 months of good, fun stories while you're getting all your ducks in a row. So it seems obvious
to
me that they were
actually
trying to...
You know, no, I'm just kidding.
Well, I mean, I realize that, you know, crossovers sell. These big events, they really sell. But, I mean, honestly, I still love a really good Fantastic Four story.
Yeah.
That's just a self-contained FF story. It starts off in FF and it ends in FF, and that's it. I love a good Spider-Man story and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I love a good X-Men story, but I can't afford to buy all the books. You know, all that kind of stuff. But it's, you know, it's obvious to them. They know that these crossovers are going to sell. You know what? At least do a service to the fans. And if you know they're going to sell, try and sell them all at once. Or if you know it's going to be a lot of work, then make it an every other month book.
How about the fact that we sort of got two contrary reports for the X-Men when they first announced Civil War? At first they said, when asked the question, how much did the X-Men going to play into this? And they said, well, the X-Men aren't really going to have too much of a part in Civil War. They're going to be off in space doing their own thing with Brubaker and all that. And then Civil War X-Men comes out. And they're literally contradicting themselves to the point where, I mean, sure, the same characters aren't in it that are in space, but they told us one thing, and we're getting a completely different thing. I thought that the X-Men would be off dealing with the ramifications of the last crossover.
Which they haven't fully done yet.
They haven't fully done it yet. They're including the 198 in Civil War, but it feels really, really forced that they're doing it that way.
And that's part of, again, I think why, I mean, you can just see the seams on this thing where they don't, I don't think that, again, it's not planned out. It's kind of like, oh, we're going with, you know, whatever happens, happens, and we're making it up as we go along. And as long as it keeps selling, that's cool. But, and I think for most people, again, that feeling that this isn't planned out,
right,
that is kind of a bummer. I know a lot of people, you know, even with Infinite Crisis, a lot of people were disappointed with the way that book ended. And that was supposedly planned out for 2 years. So I don't know, maybe Marvel's doing the right thing.
That was a grand scheme thing. Yeah. You know, the funny thing about, you know, what you're saying with the last one, when they did House of M, they had a great opportunity to explore some amazing stories inside the mutant community, figure out what happens. Now there's only 198 of them. What's going to happen to the actual fabric of the X-Men? And they haven't even touched it. Now they're hitting Civil War. And I hate to speculate, but I even say, I wonder if they made House of M, painted themselves into a corner, and they say, you know, we need to redo this and fix it. And they might just fix it on a whim in the middle of this thing. You know, all of a sudden we got some mutants back that are necessary. I mean, they, you know, just by, you know, without giving too much away, but, you know, just, you know, Quicksilver's involvement. Now it's just kind of making it a little bit easy to have people, you know, get their powers back as mutants, and we haven't even seen how cool these stories really could have been.
Were you reading Son of M by the way before he was in X Factor? Were you reading Son of M before he showed up in X Factor?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Good. Then you know the full explanation of that. Go ahead. Anyway, go ahead, John.
Well, I mean, one of the big differences between Marvel and DC for the longest time has been DC is much better about planning further in advance and stuff. Again, Infinite Crisis is a good example of that. They set the seeds for that 2-3 years ago and had been building very much towards it. Now, whether it was successful or not, whether it, you know, was enjoyable or not, as it could have been, you know, those are different questions. But at least at the beginning of the 1 year later stuff, most of the DC titles were selling, you know, as well or much better than they had been for the last decade.
Right.
And with Civil War, I mean, certainly it seems like there's a seat-of-the-pants writing kind of, or plotting going on for some of this. But, I mean, it's selling gangbusters. You know, I mean, some of the things that have crossovers are doubling or tripling in sales.
Yeah.
And now, granted, that's going to go away the minute the crossover ends. But even so, that's still pretty good.
That's the problem. I mean, people say, you know, haven't Marvel learned their lesson? Why are these books so late? They have learned their lesson, and the lesson that they've learned is that people don't care. They're still going to buy books
that
are late. And something like this, like you said, like it or not, this is a publishing phenomenon.
And in fairness, up until this point, all of the Civil War and Civil War Frontline titles had been exactly on time.
Yeah.
Now, to go from that to suddenly, okay, we're delaying everything for a few months is insane.
Yeah, and especially considering the fact that Frontline was supposed to be coming out, what, every 2 weeks originally? Is that correct from my understanding?
Every 2 or 3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they were sort of, this was their 52, in my mind. You know, Civil War Frontline was their, you know, extra title that was supposed to, you know, explain things that weren't being explained in the main crossover itself. This was going to be their huge book that they wanted to stick to a certain timetable with, and now they've completely floored that timetable, where they need to delay it so that it'll catch up with the series that's being delayed itself.
Well, and again, it's ironic, particularly with 52 going on weekly, you know, at the same time from DC. They've shown they can meet a deadline every week.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and they've also shown through 52 that, I mean, you don't, you know, the good art is good art. And so far, you know, much of what I've seen in 52 has been really good art. And they've, you know, and in this, they've had several people come in to work on one book, which I would think that in something of this kind of magnitude, I would welcome several different artists teaming in to join in on Civil War, to see this finished and completed on time. And I think that, you know, that's just kind of, again, they want to stick with McNiven. He's an excellent artist and all that, and it's just going to come out late. One of the things I was reading up on is some of the new titles that are supposed to be coming out now after Civil War are also going to be delayed. One of those is Mighty Avengers.
Yeah.
Which really, you know, bums me out because I was really looking forward to what that book was going to be about. And so, I mean, it's not even just Civil War because, you know, the way I'm reading Civil War is I'm more interested in having this be over so that I could see what Marvel's going to do to get themselves out of the corner.
The question I have then, particularly mentioning, you know, new titles and stuff like Mighty Avengers, do you think that they're going to, you know, try to get ahead on those now that they've got essentially a buffer time to work with?
Oh, yeah.
Or do you think they're going to quickly squander that away and we're going to see lateness on those titles too?
In a perfect world, you would think that they'd take advantage of this lead-in time. But then again, we're talking about Marvel, and not just Marvel, but we're just talking about mainstream comics where some of these independents, it's their bread and butter. If they don't put a book out on time, they can't pay the rent. These guys, I think we're just going to see the same thing. It's you know, if something's going to be late, it's going to be late. It's us, and especially the retailers, who are going to take it.
Well, how about the fact that in November we're going to be getting a standalone Hawkeye Scarlet Witch story that Bendis and Maliv did? The fact that they announced this a couple of weeks back, yeah, and they're saying that this is going to, you know, bridge the gap about this new Avengers, you know, number 27 that won't see print until February.
Right.
It's pretty much saying that they have known about this for a long time now, and this is finally starting to make sense here. Like, I thought for a minute that, oh, well, maybe, you know, the art on New Avengers was being late. That's why Bendis crafted this story to be done with Maliv. Now I'm thinking this is just there to have a couple filler issues so that not everything has to wait until Civil War comes out.
Well, I mean, I applaud that. I mean, at least if it's going to be a backup story or something that's there to bridge the gap, because honestly, these other books, if they're done or if they're ready, I mean, should come out on time. The sad part is that, you know, everything's all, you know, based on Civil War, so that's the big problem that you run into with every single title having a crossover, you're going to have this big ripple effect. So I'm glad that we're going to see another new Avengers story because, again, I mean, you know, a good story is a good story. And, you know, and at least that will give you something to tide you over. But they did know about this stuff ahead of time. They, you know, and I'm sure they knew that these delays were going to come. And, you know, maybe they were hoping that, you know, McNiven would get some extra speed, some extra, you know, fire behind him to get all this stuff done. But it just didn't happen. And I just can't believe that they couldn't have any of these precautionary measures taking place.
Man, I got to be more cynical than that. I think they just wanted to make themselves get through con season before they had to take any crap.
Okay.
And, I mean, they went through San Diego and then through Chicago and then... They knew this probably in San Diego.
They'd get booed out of the room.
Yeah. You know, and so it's just, it's kind of like, well, just like most people, most kids that, you know, they hold the bad news to the last second before they possibly have to tell somebody what's going on. And again, part of why I think people are having a problem with it is the fact that it was so soon, but also just, there's so many weird things, like, Brevoort comes out and starts saying, well, Miller's got a chronic illness. That's why it's late. And then
get me started on that.
Miller comes back with, what are you talking about? I'm not, you know, this has nothing to do with me. What are you blaming this on me for? And then they throw McNiven under the train. You know, it's like, oh, it's his fault. He's the one that's late. And all these other guys kind of chime in. It's just, it's so convoluted. I almost wish that they just back off and just, you know, hey, say mea culpa. We're sorry. We apologize.
Hey, I admit it. It was my fault.
That's right. It's all you.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I 100% apologize. I was secretly ghostwriting and drawing all of Civil War. So.
There you go.
Yeah. Damn.
So how's it end so we don't have to buy any more?
it ends now. No more are coming out, ever.
Exactly. Oh, good.
Yeah. The industry just collapsed. I mean...
It was Ben Reilly the whole time.
Well, no. In the end, they announced when Bullseye Target is coming out.
Oh, I thought it was going to be finished in Daredevil Father.
Sweet. Now, do you guys want to talk about this? Again, probably the biggest thing that I find kind of interesting about this is the fact that Marvel Editorial is coming out and saying we're beyond the age of the monthly book. Think that's... I mean, is that accurate? It's just an explanation for...
You got to take what they say with a grain of salt because they're so busy spin doctoring right now, particularly Brevoort.
That's what kills me, though, about this because... And, you know, I don't know, maybe you can back me up with this, but, you know, despite trade paperback sales, I mean, Marvel and DC both make the vast majority of their money still on monthly sales.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Totally.
And the retailers depend on monthly sales. And so people, you know, they're out there saying, well, why does the book have to be out every month? You know, we're past that model. We're more like bookstores. You know, that's not, I don't know if that's just pure bullshit coming out of his mouth or what, because it... If that's what we're going towards, I mean, that's really going to fundamentally change a lot of things. It's going to change how we sell comics. It's going to change how people are paid for comics, whether, you know, if they're just going to only go trade paperback route and no monthlies. I don't think they're ready for that, so I'm not really quite sure why they're saying it other than just to kind of CYA.
Well, looking at, like, the June numbers, because I haven't finished crunching the July ones yet, Marvel did over $10 million in comics, and only about 1.275 million in trades. I mean, it's not quite a 10-to-1 difference in favor of the monthlies, but just about. And particularly once you factor in something like all the Civil War stuff in July, which is, again, a huge activity there. They're very dependent on the monthly book. I've said this numerous times on, like, the Comic Geek Speak forum and stuff. The readership is shifting to a trade mentality. They want to go to the trade paperbacks. The publishing model isn't there, and quite frankly, I don't see how it can get there without fundamentally changing things in the industry, particularly at the retail level. And quite frankly, I don't know that the industry is strong enough to take that kind of shift right now.
Retailers, like you said, let's go back to this again, because retailers ultimately are the ones that are getting hurt by this, because let's figure this. They're going to sell... If 12 issues of New Avengers come out in a year, they're going to sell 12 issues at probably the same numbers. So if there's only 10 issues that are coming out in a year, if there's only 9 issues that are coming out in a year, that's basically 3 books worth of lost sales for Marvel and the retailer. So what's the purpose of a monthly book? Again, you know, it's to make money right now. I don't see how they can get beyond that.
I hate to be a retailer right now, because with all these high-profile things, with all the delayed comics and stuff, it's tough.
Yeah. Well, how about the fact that there's that, I forget who mentioned this, but on the Comic Geek Speak forums this was mentioned, that there's at least one comic book shop that's completely closing their doors until October.
They're only
going to be losing so much money.
They're actually closing on Sundays.
Oh, only on Sundays?
Yeah, that was...
okay, all right.
That was a store in a local store here for me in Milwaukee called Collector's Edge, and apparently, yeah, they're saying that at one location, they have like four locations, one of their locations is going to be closed one day a week.
Oh, all right, okay.
Until they can get this sorted out. And, you know, another of my friends works in a comic shop on Wednesdays in Kenosha here. And, again, he's saying kind of the same thing, that what we're seeing right now is usually everything's so late that we're seeing, like, 3 weeks of nothing and then 1 week of everything.
Well, one of the things I was going to say is I wonder if you're DC, what do you do to kind of capitalize on this? You know, I mean, because basically you've got some extra money in the reader's pocket for another month. Is there something that you can do? Obviously, you can't whip together a comic, a fresh one, but could you speed up the process on something else that they might want to be a part of, something that they might check out because their Civil War money's got to go somewhere that month?
Two things for that. One, if I were DC right now, I would be making sure to do whatever we can editorially to get the books out on time.
Right.
You know, make sure you're not going to get in the same damn boat, okay, particularly with something like 52. But the other thing is, where does that money go? A lot of people are saying, you know, oh, gee, Civil War is not going to be out, so that money will shift to other titles. I have yet to see any evidence that ever happens.
Yeah.
And I agree with you on that too, because again, from my anecdotal evidence with my friend working in the shop, it's the same thing. People don't, you know, they don't walk in and say, "Oh, no Civil War number 4. Well, I'll pick up a Mouse Guard and Exterminators then." They don't say that kind of stuff. They just say, "Oh, well, screw that." And then they leave. That money doesn't migrate as easily as a lot of people think it does.
Well, yeah. you know what I did this week instead of picking up comics, I picked up Ultimate Spider-Man the Game because I'd been waiting to pick that up. So that's 20 that's 20 bucks right there. And chances are next week I'm just going to have a light week and I'm going to have some extra money to spend on, you know, whatever the hell else I want to do, but not comics. Because quite frankly, you know, I've got a couple of trades I could read, I've got a couple of back issues that I could read, and at the same time, yeah, sure, I might go on to Amazon and, you know, maybe buy a trade or something like that, or I might go on to InStock Trades and buy a trade, but I'm not going to be picking up any extra individual issues, because quite frankly, I spent too much money in the first place. This is just a break for me.
Yeah.
That all makes sense, you know, for you guys to do. It's funny, because I'm a DCBS guy. And so, and especially now, I just moved to an area that doesn't have a local comic shop, and so I'm reading this, and so I just know, okay, so Civil War for me is going to get delayed, not just, you know, by a month, but actually by 2 months, because I'm still kind of on monthly shipping, so it'll be a while until I get to read another, you know, Civil War issue. So, I mean, that's just like another one of those things, too, because now you got that whole crowd who does the whole mail order thing.
Yeah, I'm in that crowd, too, but I get my stuff weekly.
Yeah, I'm about to switch.
Hardcore. Well,
that's right.
There was one guy who actually does sort of fall into the category of the guy who's switching over to independence, and he's a regular listener of the show, so I want to read his forum post here, and that's, of course, Matthew Guy. And this is he was the extreme here, pretty much. And let me read what he had to say. I am ticked off at Marvel big time. They couldn't announce this at a con with the fans and tell us the truth ahead of time. Marvel needs to be punished, and it will be by me. The tool is my wallet. No Annihilation number 1 for me. Just my core books of Marvel. She-Hulk, Daredevil, and Captain America. That is it. I will get the Civil War and Civil War Frontline when they come out, and a few tie-ins, Iron Man and Amazing Spider-Man, after Civil War wraps up in February 07. That is it. No more Marvel events for me unless Marvel The End is released, but that was released a couple years ago. Have the freaking book out on time, or don't try to sell the book in the first place. Marvel had me in with Daredevil last year and out with Civil War in 07. If I don't like the series when it is finished, off to eBay they go, and wash my hands with Marvel once and for all. Giving my extra money to DC by trying out new series, Firestorm, DMZ, and Jonah Hex. By Athena Voltaire and Indy. My final words to Marvel and Joe Q are as followed, and the views expressed by Matthew Guy are not necessarily the views expressed by Comic Timing or any of its affiliates. Daily Bugle headline, Marvel drop dead. My bucks go to DC and Indies. Matthew Guy.
Wow.
I don't think most people are going to hold something like that. And this isn't to say anything about Matt either, but you know, comic fans are notorious. And this is kind of why publishers keep doing this, is because, by and large, we bitch, and we bitch, and then we still plunk down the money to buy the thing when it comes out.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping, you know, if people really are bothered by this, for one thing, I think they need to let Marvel know, write a letter, do an email, do something, and then just not buy the book if it really does bother you. Otherwise, there's nothing really, there's no point of complaining if you're just going to buy it anyway.
I agree with you, but that's going down kind of the vote with your wallet mentality, and quite frankly, I've never bought into that. And the reason I haven't bought into that is it's so easy for the publisher to misinterpret what that vote means.
Yeah.
Right, that's like I said, though. I mean, make sure you got to write a letter.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And you got to let your voice be heard. Let them know, you know, what you mean. I mean, honestly, I mean, anybody's money is their own. So, I mean, you could do whatever you'd like in terms of with your money. For me, personally, there are some Marvel characters that I love dearly, and I love to read their stuff. Does this disappoint me? Yes. And will I write a handwritten letter to Marvel to let them know what I think? Sure. Whether or not it means anything to them, they'll at least know that, hey, this fan was upset, and whether or not more people join in with that, you know, that's fine. But, yeah, I mean, that's pretty hardcore. And most people that I've known that have kind of gone the, all right, no more Marvel, no more DC route, but yet they still love those characters, you always end up coming back.
Yeah, yeah. And okay, you know what? I have to admit this, okay? After saying that I was not going to pick up Spider-Man Black Cat, after that giant delay that Kevin Smith had, I admit it, I picked up the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Okay? Because I was curious to see what he was doing with it and whether or not he changed the script to make it fit into Marvel continuity of that particular day. And you know what? He actually did. Which was amazing, because even though there was that gap, it still felt like it was a story going on at that particular time. That's an exception to the rule, though, because there are plenty of books that do later come out, and they're way behind. Obviously, for different circumstances, Superman Batman would be an example. I mean, obviously, you know, Jeff Loeb had, you know, the issues with his, you know, his son and all that, so I can fully understand why it was late, but when it came out, it was really, really late, to the point where it no longer was relevant in DC's continuity anymore.
Man, so that's Ian, are you saying that late does not equal better? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, that's pretty much what I'm saying there, although it can. It can happen where late does equal better, but a lot of the times, late just equals late.
Right, that's kind of what I'm getting tired of seeing in these threads all the time, is the inevitable, well, do you want it done right or do you want it done on time?
I want argument. Both.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. And I agree, you know, granted, if they think this is a huge thing, they don't want to screw it up, you know, it's their prerogative to do it the way that they want to have it done. But having something be late, I mean, taking an extra 2 or 3 months does not mean it's better than it would have been.
I remember 20 years ago, you know, I was reading comics and stuff, and then one week it's like, wow, you know, Legion didn't come out this week. It's a week late. Oh, my God. And it was just, that sort of thing at that point didn't happen. Books came out like clockwork. Every second week you would get this book. Every third week you would get this book. I mean, these days, lateness is not an exception. It's beyond the norm.
Yeah.
You know, I think what we're seeing here is the fan base just finally getting, you know, tired of it, and this is something that they can just kind of lash out at.
Are we in an era where we're expecting too much from art in comics for them to be monthly anymore?
Oh, I don't know.
Seeing as we're getting basically the same page count and stuff like that that we'd been getting, you know, 20 years ago, and the tools have gotten better and stuff like that. Now, I mean, I'm no artist. I had my artistic ability or whatever I may have had surgically removed at a young age. So I really can't speak to that. But it would seem to me that the hurdles for getting the production done are fewer and easier to get past. That no, I mean, I don't think we're expecting too much. I do think the bar has dropped.
I don't know. And I got to be honest, I look at McNiven's stuff, and it's insanely detailed. You know, that's the trend these days. People like somebody like Brian Hitch, insanely detailed. And I don't know. I don't know what their work ethic is. Is it late because they're only doing, not enough? Or is it late because it's taking them too damn long to draw every little wrinkle in, you know, the guy's clothes who's 5 miles back from the main battle scene? I don't know if that's the case.
I don't know either, but I hesitate to use the term work ethic in that, because it may be that he's working his butt off and stuff. It just takes him longer to do it.
Right, that's what I mean. If these guys aren't able to do a book in a month, then it seems silly to pretend that they can, or
I totally agree with that. Well, if you know this guy takes 6 weeks to do a book, schedule the book to come out every 6 weeks, and build in some buffer time. Sooner or later, he's going to get sick, he's going to need, something's going to happen,
Well, there's a reason why a lot of artists stick to covers, and that's quite frankly because they can't do sequential art because it takes them frickin' forever to actually finally do it. And one of the guys who was sticking to cover art for years, and of course is Hughes, is going to be doing All-Star Wonder Woman now. And I can only think just how late that book is going to be every single month.
That's par for the course for the All-Star line these days, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's the unfortunate thing. And then hopefully this guy is, doing it further in advance. One of the things that just kind of really cracks me up, because it's a whole lot different, I guess, in the world of comics, but in most other places I've ever worked at, lateness is frowned upon, and if your lateness causes the company to lose any form of money, usually it ends with a lost job. And that's the thing is, when you come to the comics, we've said the book's going to be late and we're still going to buy it anyway. I think what I'm going to do right now is I'm going to go back and look at my past issues of Civil War, and I'm actually going to study each panel and see if it was worth it to stick with McNiven throughout the whole thing.
Well, every panel that mentions CGS was totally worth it.
Yes, oh yeah, true. Just those panels.
Yes, exactly. And before we get farther into this, I want to read the other forum comment that was left on the Comic Timing forums. This one by Matt Kramer, who's Darth Kramer on the forums. As far as Civil War delays go, they don't affect me at all, so I'll just wait a month. I've got a short box full of stuff to read, so it's not like four books are that bad. But the concern I have is for the retailers. When you eliminate 4 to 6 of Marvel's top sellers from their budgets with no notice, you really hurt the store's bottom line. If Marvel were to give them as little as a week's notice, they may have been able to cover the losses, but since they dropped the bomb at the last possible minute, a lot of retailers will be seeing nearly $2,000 in guaranteed sales for the month not coming in, meaning they have to scramble to make ends meet. Really has a good point there.
Hey, well, that's a fantastic point, because ultimately, I go through the internet, but I love my local comic shops. I love being able to still, go into there, and anything that would hurt them financially, in my eyes, is sad. And it's just, and I hope that there's some kind of program, that there's something, then, again, it's accepting the blame, that maybe Marvel will do something, to step in to help these guys out, maybe give them some incentives in the coming months.
Consider the fact that the final order cutoff date hasn't hit for these things yet.
Yeah.
So if the retailer really thinks it's gonna, just kill his ability to sell the next issue of Civil War, he can reduce his orders. The question is that really gonna happen? And that's a hell of a gamble either way for a retailer to have to take.
Yeah. Yeah. What would you do if you were the retailer and you knew that your rent money, or to pay your employees was based right here on these Civil War sales?
Yeah, that's the biggest problem, because a lot of people, too, that I've seen have said, well, so what? So they don't sell it now, they'll sell it next month. Well
that
it
matters
on a month-to-month, you can't make rent that month, that's bad news.
Well, yeah.
I'm in a college town, and, at least back when I was working at the store, which is, back when I was in college, a huge percentage of the customers were students. Now, if you take something and kick it from early October and kick it to, December 20th or whatever,
they're out.
Suddenly, those customers are now going to be home on vacation. They're going to pick it up there, or it kicks into the next semester, and maybe those students don't come back for whatever reason.
And also, I just graduated, so I'm not a comic. I'm not a college student anymore. But as a former college student, and I still sort of have the college student mentality, I know this. With the money that I have, as previously mentioned, it's going to go towards other things.
It may not be there next month.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Exactly. It might not be there next month. And even if it is there next month, well, it's still going to be the same amount of money that I usually have to spend that particular month. So if they're delaying these books, I'm going to have to choose which books not to pick up. And in the process, I'm sort of screwed. screwing out the, you know, the local comic shop and screwing out Marvel, because there's going to be a couple books that I'm just not going to be able to pick up until either later on or possibly not even at all, because I'm just not going to have the money to do so.
All right, I'm not worried about hurting Marvel. You know, it's more for these retailers. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know very many mega stores. I don't know of a whole lot of, you know, retailers that don't need the money. And most of these are shops that I think of that, you know, that really go month to month, if not week to week, because, you know, they'll follow those trends. Because I know some of these stores get mad when too many books come out in 1 week because they can't sell them all.
They also have to pay for them.
Exactly. And many of these stores can't order enough copies to get the higher end discounts or anything like that. And that's why I really do hope that if Marvel wants to do the right thing, they'll just, you know, shut up about this, apologize to the fans, but then, you know, create some incentives, some newer incentives for these retailers for the coming months.
I'll go back again to that interview that I saw in Newsarama with Tom Brevoort, where he was saying that during the House of M or something, that I can't, some other late title that retailers cried and complained and said, oh, you know, you have to give us a deal and this is late.
Yeah.
And then he made some point about how, well, then they sold out and then they were begging us for more. So I have a feeling that they're not going to give a crap. They're not going to do anything. They're going to do what they want to do, and that's kind of why I've always been a little baffled by sort of the attitude that the big two seem to have sometimes towards the retail side, where they're almost just like, yeah, you know, that's your problem.
I think Marvel has been a lot worse in that respect than DC. I mean, I went to a number of years the trade expo that happened right before or after the San Diego Comic-Con. And, you know, again, it was a huge night and day difference between Marvel and DC. DC had a more corporate structure. They did what I thought was a fairly dry presentation. They were reading off a script and whatnot. But that presentation covered the entire year's worth of here's what we're going to be doing. So they would be saying 1 year, oh, we're going to be doing this, that, and the other. You'd go to the convention the next year, and it would just be coming out a few weeks after that. That's how far in advance they were planning. Whereas Marvel, on the other hand, had so much respect for the retailers and the ability to let them kind of plan ahead that they basically read through the next 3 months' worth of preview stuff and said, okay, that's all we know what we're doing. The retailers are like, what do you mean? We already know that. That was in previews. What are you planning?
Yeah.
You know? And I attribute some of that to Bob Wayne used to work in retail. You know, I don't know how many of the people at Marvel have that kind of experience and really understand, you know, just how tough of a position that is for the retailers.
Well, I have the interview here that Tom Brevoort actually had on Newsarama, and there's two sections here that I want to read off that actually go with the point that Matt made previously. And I'm going to sort of bring in here. Firstly, I think the retailers who are saying this are wrong in the long term, because right this second, they're most concerned about their short-term future, so they're not worrying about the long term. But to throw out two examples, look at Ultimate Extinction and the follow-up Ultimate Galactus series. They all sold well enough at the end of the day, but as soon as we had to bring in substitute artists, quality artists in all cases, the momentum of the series immediately started to slow. The trilogy should have been a monster seller for the Ultimate line, but it wasn't. And I think the reason that it wasn't is that the integrity of the project was compromised as we tried to meet the schedule. And that'll also affect the long-term sell-through of the Ultimate Galactus trade paperback. And he's about to make a statement here that I completely disagree with. Or you can look across town at the end of Infinite Crisis. You can almost chart where the bloom started to go off the rose at the moment they had to pull Ivan Reis in to do a couple of pages in issue number 3. In the short term, people were willing to put up with it. But as each successive issue had to rely more and more heavily on substitute artists in greater and greater quantity, you could just see the dissatisfaction creep in to the point where what seemed to be most discussed about issue number 7 was the art inconsistency. I'm not saying that DC was wrong to do this. I don't know what kinds of financial pressures they might have been under or publishing plan pressures they might have been under. But what I can tell for certain is what it did to the reading experience in the end. And having seen that, I choose to try to learn from it. And there's a bit here about the thing that Matt was just mentioning. It was actually Daredevil number 6 that came out when Kevin Smith and Joe Quesada were doing the book. At the time, we had a system in place where Diamond, wherein we had a system in place with Diamond wherein their sales reps would call assorted accounts, and we'd receive summaries every 2 weeks about their concerns and reactions to all of the Marvel product. At the time, I think it was Daredevil number 6 was about 6 weeks late, and the week before it came out, the retail feedback we got was, the book is dying on the vine, my customers aren't interested anymore, Marvel should allow me to cut my orders by 40% without any penalty. And then, 2 weeks later, a week after the issue shipped, we got the retailer feedback in, and it said, the book flew off the stands, I can't get it anymore, Marvel should have known that demand was going to outstrip supply and overprinted by 10% or 20%, which is to say, nobody knows anything absolutely. Which let's talk a bit about the DC comment that Tom made first. I mean, what do you guys think about that statement about Infinite Crisis there?
Did somebody I just saw posted the sales numbers? I don't know if that was John or if it was somebody else.
It was somebody else, and I don't think they accounted for reorders.
Okay,
I got them in front of me.
Yeah, go ahead. I think the general point of it was just the simple fact that the numbers don't match what he said. But if you
The first one sold 270,100 copies. The second one, 225,700. The third, where he said things started to change, did 218,800 copies. Four did 202,900 copies. Then it goes up with five to 205,100 copies. Up again with six, again from four, to 208,000 copies. And then 7, which sold the worst, sold at 198,400 copies. So it's not like it suddenly just dropped off the charts with issue 3. It actually went up a bit. 1 started out the best. It dropped by 45,000 or whatever to 2. Again, standard first issue, second issue drop kind of a thing. Dropped another 7,000 or whatever with 3. Dropped another 16,000 to 4, but then started to climb back up a little. And I think we're actually still seeing some reorder activity with Infinite Crisis. I'd have to double-check that, though.
At this point, though, I have a feeling probably more folks are probably turning to the trade for Infinite Crisis now that that's out. But
I would think so, too.
Yeah.
My big beef with that, again, the thing that he just said is, you know, they're only thinking in the short term. Well, Marvel themselves, they make their profits in the short term. Retailers obviously make their sales in the short term. They're selling week to week, month to month. They can't say, well, in a year they'll have the trade and it'll be high quality and I'll sell a million copies. You know, it doesn't work that way. So I'm not sure why he's trying to make that point, other than, again, just to kind of cover his own behind.
You know, Marvel knows that, you know, with the current trends right now and stuff, I mean, they're not going to necessarily just rely on the local comic shops to sell their trades. You know, they're going to be able to, you know, people are going to be buying their trades from Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble or, you know, even, you know, InStockTrades.com, like those kind of things. They know that the trades, you know, in a sense, is a different kind of animal than the whole story, and it seems like maybe that's not quite reaching the level of sales as the monthlies yet, you know. But I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if you know, they start banking on these absolute editions and these extra edition kind of things to become the norm. I just wish that they maybe should have just waited and released Civil War as a big anthology book with all these things tying in, from Fantastic Four to Spider-Man and you know, X-Men, all this other kind of stuff in there. But I don't think they're ready to experiment with stuff like that.
Yeah, well, they don't know how well things like that would be able to do, because, well, as previously stated, the monthly books are pretty much their primary resource. Yeah, I mean, would any of us actually have been willing to just pick up a quote unquote absolute edition of Civil War right off the bat? And that would probably cost at least like $80-$90 right off the bat, I would have a feeling.
I might be inclined to do it if it was complete, first off, if it was on time, and honestly, if I knew some more about this. I mean, in this day and age, they're putting out the preview pages online and that kind of stuff. I mean, I would be more inclined to purchase a full-on trade collected series of something that, if I knew it was going to be, number one, in continuity, and number two, you know, I was going to get, you know, more bang for my buck, you know?
I mean, I wouldn't go for a full-blown absolute edition or whatever, but yeah, if it had come out in trade, you know, as it was, you know, originally packaged that way or whatever, sure, I'd have gotten it. Personally, I kind of wish they'd done Infinite Crisis that way.
Yeah.
You know, build up to everything. The next week, the only thing DC comes out with is Infinite Crisis. Bam, the next week, it's 1 year later.
Huh. You know, that's part of the problem. Again, we're talking about the shift and whether the comic industry is going to shift to a no monthlies, just like a book a hardcover or some kind of model like that, I don't see the money being there. I don't see the money being there to pay the artists to work for 6 months on a book without any, you know, money coming in. I don't see them taking any risks on titles that they can't, you know. If a book sucks after 1 month, hey, you can cut your loss. But if you're getting investing in huge projects up front without seeing any return, I don't know. I don't think the average comic buyer is willing to drop $20-$30 on a huge hardcover every week. But
I think that it's not necessarily, you know, if we see any big changes in the industry, and again, you know, we might be just getting too far away from Civil War, but, you know, I don't think that the changes will be in more print. Kind of stuff, you know what I mean? I think that maybe, you know, maybe with stuff like this, you know, experiment a little bit with some digital stuff. Even, you know, charge a little fee or something on Marvel's website so that the freaking pages that McNiven does have finished, maybe we could read. Maybe we could take a look at them online and do something in that vein, or, you know, or, I mean, heck, it'd be kind of neat to see something like this if they were going to experiment with any kind of digital comics, to go the weekly route, and then you're only reading a couple pages a week as the issues, you know,
$1.99 a page.
There you go. Just put them all in
the ideas.
All up on iTunes. All up on iTunes for $1.99 a page.
Well, the sad thing is I think not only is readership shifting towards more of the trade buying mentality and whatnot, we're seeing some of the independent publishers realizing that it's not cost effective for them to do monthly books. They'll come out straight as a trade collection.
Right.
Sentinels from Drumfish is a good example of that. I believe Finder, Carlos Speed McNeil was doing that, and a few others. So we're seeing that trend. That having been said, Matt, I totally agree with you. I don't know how they're going to be able to justify the cost. They're not going to be able to do the experimentation. The risk management calculations become totally different.
And let's not forget, too, that a lot of Marvel's income comes from ad sales. You know, and they can't sell ads if they don't have the numbers, because right now they're leveraging their entire line to advertisers, saying, you know, we have a million books or a million sales, so if you want to advertise your Nike shoes or whatever, we're a good place to do that. If you only have it coming out once every couple of months, or, you know, if you're going to have a high price format, again, right, I don't think people are going to put up with that kind of crap in a trade paperback.
Well, if I'm an advertiser and I'm paying for space in your book and I'm relying on the timing of that book coming out at this time to coincide with the launch of my product, I'm going to be pretty ticked too to see that this book is going to be late by a month.
How about all those movies that you know, advertise on the back of comic books and things along those lines? You know,
movies and video games, TV, all that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm
sure.
Not sure how the ads work, but I had kind of thought that it was, okay, whatever we print at Marvel this month or this week is going to have these ads. It's not that this issue is going to have these ads. Now, that's different with the text pages from Marvel and stuff, which is considered part of the content.
Well, I would take a look at some of the stuff that's on the Superman Batman issues. Those things were pretty late, and those things had actually some ads in them, not just from within the house, from within the company, but I'm talking even like, you know, some movie and TV ads that were a few months late.
Okay.
Because of that. Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, that's just a real bad deal, and you know, I mean, I think ultimately, you know, I mean, when it comes to Civil War, I just wish, you know, again, hindsight's 20/20. Just maybe if they would have waited a couple months to launch this thing. I know they wanted to get the first issue out in time for the last issue of Infinite Crisis, so it'd compete in that way. But I just wish they would have waited.
I agree with that entirely. But the other angle is, once they got into this position for whatever reason,
right?
The way they tried to get out of it was just so appalling, and that I think a lot of the backlash comes from that.
I mean, you consider that partially unethical in terms of, you know, keeping it from the mainstream audience?
If I were a retailer and found out that, you know, the biggest book of the month that I was expecting today isn't coming out, and I find out in the shipping list, I would not be happy.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's how some retailers found out.
Oh, sure.
And
that's
inexcusable.
I heard that, or I was reading this on some forums, that the only reason anyone knew it was late is because it didn't show up on the shipping list.
Yeah.
Marvel actually did not say a word to anyone. The comments came from people saying, where the hell is this book? Why is it not on the shipping list? And people wrote to Miller's, you know, forum, where's the book? And he is like, oh, I have no idea.
What do you mean it's not out?
Well, and part of this is why I'm trying to incorporate how late books are into my number crunching process. Is I'm curious, you know, I'd like to get some sort of metric as to exactly how much this really does or doesn't impact sales. Because back in the pre-order days, if something got re-solicited, it was going to get knocked down, you know, at least 1,000 copies minimum.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And you could count on that like clockwork. These aren't re-solicited, they're just rescheduled, so they're probably not going to see it and stuff. But yeah, Marvel and all the companies are really bad at this. They don't fess up, hey, we're late, we're going to come out with this, and people just kind of find out when they, you know, wake up and say, oh, wait, shouldn't this have come out 3 months ago? That's inexcusable.
The Geek Speak podcast in me says that they pulled a Sony. with the PlayStation 3, you know, being delayed as many times as it has already, or that they pulled a Microsoft with all the times that Windows Vista has been delayed.
They don't know where it's going.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, just the fact that they feel that they can pull things like this and, quote-unquote, get away with it. Well, meanwhile, you're alienating your retailers by making them find out through a third party about this.
Crap, we just took the mask off of Spider-Man, and so-and-so's an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.? What the heck did we just do? And, and they have to go back and fix it.
How do we get out of this? Well, I mean, you know, again, what you said before, I agree with that, too, Ian, that... You know, the thing is that they can basically be late. They can do that because there's not really much of a choice. The fans have shown that they're going to still buy it. Retailers, I mean, a retail store cannot not sell Marvel,
right?
Yeah.
And succeed in the marketplace.
Agreed.
So, I mean, what can you do? What are you going to say? Oh, I'm mad at you, but okay, I'm going to cut my own throat by not selling your books.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know. They're in kind of a position where they can do whatever the hell they want. There's not much anybody can say about it.
But it doesn't benefit anybody for this to happen. So I mean,
true.
The solution isn't just to, you know, place blame or try to punish anyone. It's try to fix the system to where the publishers are able to get their stuff done on time, the creators are able to get their stuff done on time, the publishers are able to get the information to the retailers in a timely fashion, both on what the comics are going to be about and if they're late, and the retailers can feed back the relevant information about the customer base.
Get fill-in artists in your bullpen that are really good.
Yeah.
You know?
Know how fast your artists can work and schedule accordingly.
Yeah, you should be realistic. Yeah. That's what the editorial is supposed to be doing. They're supposed to be scheduling. They're supposed to know how fast people can work. They're supposed to be scheduling the books appropriately. You know, like you said, if it's a bi-monthly book, then it's a bi-monthly book. I don't think anybody would be upset about that. Just when you don't know what you're doing, when it looks bad like this, it just bothers a lot of different people.
It might have even been cool if they would have thought ahead on this and made Civil War, you know, 1 month, made Civil War Frontline the next month, or make both of them on a staggered, you know, release, so that every, you know, at least every 4 or 5 weeks you're getting one of those books in your hand, and you have all the crossovers going on. You're not going to miss a beat.
Or split the artwork in half to where you've got one side or one art team doing Cap's side, the other one doing Iron Man's side, or something along those lines.
That would have been a great idea. I mean, that
definitely could have worked, too, if you have either two kind of similar artists with similar styles, or, you know, it could even work if you have dissimilar styles to represent the different sides.
Get a contrasting view and all that. Why aren't we writing this?
Well, hey, I mean, why do you think DC was able to succeed? You know, they got, you know, George Perez to fill in when Jimenez couldn't get out the work fast enough. You know, he got some pages done on Infinite Crisis. And I mean, sure, Ivan Reyes didn't exactly have, you know, that much of a similar style to them, but the fact that they got artists that could mesh well with the guy who was late helped Infinite Crisis out substantially.
And in the end, those pages looked really well. They looked really good.
They did. They really did.
And again, that was a title that, you know, if that was late, literally the entire mainstream DC Universe line would have been late.
No question.
And we do have to argue, to be fair, and someone else pointed this out too, that this delay does not really affect the majority of Marvel Comics.
In terms of number of titles, yes. In terms of actual sales, I don't know.
Unfortunately, it affects the biggest selling Marvel Comics, but it doesn't affect... I mean, you know what I'm saying?
I know what you're saying.
The whole Marvel Universe is not affected in the same way that 1 year later would have been screwed if Infinite Crisis was late.
Does New Avengers get delayed?
Well, actually, no. There's the November issue is going to be coming out as normal, as previously mentioned. They have that
the Hawkeye.
The Hawkeye Scarlet Witch. From there, there's no New Avengers actually solicited until number 27, which comes out in February. But there will be the Illuminati miniseries that's coming out that's going to quote-unquote fill that gap.
I mean, the new Avengers issues have to coincide with the Mighty Avengers issues because they both are going to kind of follow, I guess, two teams that might be formed after Civil War. So they need to match New Avengers up with the new Mighty Avengers, and all that's been delayed.
It just seems like they're taking the top, you know, 5-10, you know, Marvel titles by and large and just saying, nope, they're not going to happen next month.
That
could be, you know, a million copies not sold.
That definitely, also that represents thousands of dollars that the shop is not going to have coming in that month, which for a lot of people with smaller shops, I mean, that could make or break the shop.
Right.
I would hope the stores aren't that much on the edge, but I fear that they are in some cases.
I mean, you'd be surprised. I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, many of these guys don't even take a salary for themselves.
Yeah.
Just because they love their store and they love to keep it open. You know, you'll see a lot of, you know, 50% off back issue sales going on.
one of the guys who was posting on the Geek Speak forum, you know, said in one of his later posts that he's, you know, in the process of, you know, opening up a store. And, you know, he's totally up in arms about this. And once I realized that was his standpoint, it's like, well, damn, yeah. If I were a retailer, I would just be, you know, flipping out and completely beside myself.
Yeah.
You know, and what do you do about this? How do you handle it?
Well, that'd be like Walmart, you know, not getting their shipment of, like, you know, Docker pants.
Yeah.
Who's going to buy them?
Well, hey, if there's one thing that comes out of this that I'm actually sort of amused about, is the fact that the one writer that gets out of this entire delay scot-free is Ed Brubaker.
Jerk.
Yeah. Daredevil's coming out as is. Captain America's coming out as is. Uncanny X-Men's coming out as is. So he's one of the few writers that gets out of this entire situation.
You know why?
With every single book.
Because if Captain America's late, the terrorists win.
That's what I've always said.
And see, Iron Man is so far behind that he's not even having Civil War tie-ins, so...
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's completely irrelevant to the current story.
It might catch up with the Civil War.
You know what? That's funny, too, because you know, now you mention that. I mean, Marvel has always maintained that they were not trying to present one side as being right.
Oh, man.
But the way
they're only presenting
books,
one side.
I know. The books that have only come out are only the Cap side books. So how can you possibly have... Who's still on Iron Man's side?
The real irony is Iron Man's the futurist.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you'd think he'd be coming out first or something. I don't know.
Well, the funny thing is you know...
He's too drunk to come out first.
You'll get through the entire Civil War, you know, miniseries. Finally, Iron Man's going to catch up and you're going to go, oh, man, I was on the wrong side.
Yeah, what you didn't really know is that.
Now I get it.
I mean, yeah, Iron Man's so far behind, I expect the next issue to have Jim Lee art. I mean, come on.
You know, this is again where I come back to, is this editorial or what is this? Because, you know, somehow during the 90s, Jim Lee could produce a monthly X-Men title. Somehow Frank Miller could do Daredevil monthly. But somehow now... can't. I don't know.
Well, you see, it's a disease called Liefeld syndrome. That
in fairness, with Jim Lee, I mean, he does have a lot more corporate responsibilities these days and stuff, and he may not be able to spend as much time with the drawing board.
Nowadays, they run their own company, you know, and they actually, you know, it's like it's the same thing. Everybody has the same goal when they work. They want to work and do well so that they get to a point where they don't have to work so much. And that's, you know, and that's the case with these guys. You know, they made it to a successful level where they could say, I'm not doing as many books or anything like that. And when one of my books does come out, I want it to look like it's a treat or something
like
that. Yeah,
and once you get to a certain status, you basically have no fear of being fired or being penalized because you realize that the company needs you more than you need them.
Right, and that's the sad thing.
but out of respect for the readers and the people actually, you know, paying for the work, you ought to get it all done in-house and then kick it out the door once you've got it done.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 issue miniseries that take years to finish, I can't imagine that they don't have the first issue in hand, ready to go to the printer before they solicit it. And clearly that's not the case.
Yeah, well, think about how long it's taken for that Shazam miniseries to be finished over at DC.
Yes.
That's being done, I believe that's the Bones.
Jeff Smith. Now, the
Jeff
problem
Smith,
with that
yeah.
is they announced it way the hell too early. You know, they did the same thing, and I think that's what eventually killed Power Company, is they had come out with Kurt Busiek interviews, and here's a sketch of the characters and stuff, like a year before the series hit. And by the time it hit, you know, I'm sitting there thinking, oh yeah, I remember hearing about this a long time ago. They don't have the marketing engine hitting on the right times at the right places. They're announcing stuff way too early, and then it seems late. I mean, same with the Batwoman stuff. It was old news before the character even hit print.
Right. Some of the fun that I had when I was packing up my stuff and moving to a new house was flipping through my old Wizard magazines and playing the game of, hey, which books actually never actually came out? You know, because they would advertise,
yeah.
You look at it and you go, oh, this is going to be so sweet, this is going to be so awesome. Never came out.
Well, how about that second Jeff Loeb, Jim Lee Batman arc? Then?
Absolutely. You know, Kevin Smith on Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, God. Wow. Yeah. I remember that being talked about. That never happened because if it did, we'd still be waiting on issue 2.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, they used to be able to get stuff out month in, month out, like clockwork. They've lost that ability, and I think that's partially with some of the creators and stuff. I think that's more with the editorial and production staff in-house. They can't either traffic the book, they can't manage the people or the time frames well enough. I mean, something has fallen apart. And it's not just Marvel, it's not just DC, it's across the board.
And you know what else, though, I'll add to that is that part of what Tom Brevoort said, I do agree with that. We're seeing way more comic buyers now who buy for creative team. They don't buy for character, they buy for the team. So having a fill-in artist, if you're in an era when people are only buying a book because Bendis is writing it, and if someone else writes it, then there's no reason to buy that book anymore for these people.
I would agree with that. I'd have been totally outraged if they had gotten a fill-in artist of any sort for even, you know, a couple of pages of the JLA Avengers stuff. That was something people, you know, me, I was buying it not strictly because I was going to buy it anyways. Who am I kidding? But George Perez was doing the art. You know, if they had gotten anybody else, it's like, no.
Well, it wouldn't be what they advertised. It wouldn't be the book that they were shooting for. And sometimes I just wish for just a good book to come out. But then the unfortunate thing is that there are certain writers and artists that are out there now that you're mostly guaranteed a good book if they write it, or at least a good try.
Yeah, and that's the problem is when creators become more important than the characters, then you just kind of change way around the whole way that they do business. Because like you said, you know, in the 70s and 80s, somebody didn't do their job, there's a fill-in issue.
Yeah.
Right.
But people nowadays, you're paying $3 a comic, people aren't going to put up with a subpar issue anymore.
And that plays into the whole expectations on the fan base of tell us why this didn't get done. If they're expecting a particular person to be writing it and another particular person to be doing the art, and that issue doesn't come out on time, well, which of those two guys didn't do their job?
Right.
You know, there's a person there that they can target, you know, and people are saying, well, it's like, you know, any other business. No, it's not like any other business. If, you know, I go to the store and there's some thing there that's not built right or whatever, I have a company to blame. I don't have a person to blame. Whereas I think that's part of why we got so much of the blame game going on this thing the last, you know, 24, 48 hours on this.
Right.
There was
either nobody or everybody's to blame. That's it. You know, honestly, you can't put the blame on one specific person, and that's what everybody seems to be trying to do. It's either everybody's fault.
Gotta
or nobody's.
Say that. I mean, there's certainly blame to go around, but Brevoort, for my mind, is where a lot of it centers.
Yep.
He was in charge of scheduling it, getting it all done, and that's not to say it should have come out on time and to hell with him or whatever, but he should have been able to say something sooner. He should not have blindsided the retailers. Then to go around and basically throw the creative team to the wolves. I mean, hell, I mean, I'm glad this didn't play out at one of the conventions, because I could see them on a on a panel or says, hey, you know, come on up here, you know, gets one of the guys and literally throws him into the crowd to get mauled or something.
Like, well, that was the thing I heard. Somebody told me at Chicago, it was a real Chicago Civil War panel, that Quesada and other people were patting him on the back, saying what a great job he's doing for keeping everything on time. And then just like 2 weeks later, we have this kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. Know? I mean, well, that's a whole company thing. I mean, that's an entire, you know, when one person on the bottom level doesn't do their job, it keeps rolling all the way up because somebody else needed to have the accountability in check to make sure that this person was on time. See, you know, I don't know what's going on in the personal lives of these guys, and nothing's come out about that kind of thing.
Some of that has come out. Mark Miller's got a chronic illness. Clearly that's got something to do with all this. It's like, so the writer, who should have done his job on issue 4 months ago,
yeah,
has a chronic illness that apparently didn't flare up and immediately, you know, the night before cause all this or something.
It's a time travel disease.
Yeah. it's a retcon virus.
Superboy hit his little, you know, universe-breaking thing and affected the Marvel.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's ripple effect, I'm telling you.
Like I said, I think we're all going to agree on that.
So, do you guys, again, maybe we should bring this back to this question, because this is what I think is the center of the whole argument. Are we in an era where we are no longer supposed to expect monthly comics?
I think we're in an era where we no longer can expect monthly comics. I think we should be able to. But I think we're also in an era where we're getting perpetual events, everything they can do to prop up the sales.
Hmm.
It's just a bad situation all the way around.
We're in an era right now where, and you kind of see it everywhere else you go and you shop, customer service is declining, and I think this to me just kind of shows, sadly enough, it's hit my comics too, where it's not about making fans not necessarily even happy. It's not, and the funny thing is the comic book company, we're not just their customer, the retailers are their customer, and it's, you know, they're not taking into account what's going to happen to the retailers, to the local comic shops, because there may be a plan in mind where all this stuff, you know, eventually is going to get in the hands of other things besides local comic shops, where it might be okay because they're just going to they're going to try and focus on casual buyers. But in reality, I mean, if they're trying to pull in casual buyers, crossovers aren't going to work.
The comic industry cannot survive on casual buyers.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, talking about the casual buyers here. There's obviously one of the conspiracy theories is that they don't want Iron Man to be such a dick before his movie comes out. I mean, do you think that has anything to do with the delays at all?
There may be some write-ups involved. I mean, there are some rewrites. Well, I mean, and that's some of the stuff I'm wondering is, unless he comes out smelling like roses at the end of this thing, and he's the actual hero of this, his movie's coming out first.
you know what, though? I don't even think that matters, because I don't think the average moviegoer gives a shit about what happens in the comics, to tell you the truth.
Well, they've had one or two movies get tanked. I believe it was a Nick Fury movie, because the person who was going to star in it, and I forget who it was, read the comic that was coming out at the time, which was a Max imprint title, and just said, no.
This isn't the David Hasselhoff project you're talking about.
No, it was long after.
Okay.
No, we wish that was canned, but no, that wasn't.
That's what's weird, I think, about, you know, what Marvel's doing and with their media properties is that there's such a disconnect between their movies and the comics. Because you look at, like, the Spider-Man films that have been so successful, those could just be basically right out of Ditko or Romita and Stan Lee's era. There's none of that kind of modern-day kind of gobbledygook that's involved with that stuff. So I don't know. I really don't think that has much to do with the film.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things where it's, you know, I'm not completely sure of that, just because of the fact that Spider-Man, I think, could sell anything, because you don't even have to know anything about the Spider-Man comics to enjoy the movie and that kind of stuff. But when there's a media blitz that's going to start to happen with stuff like Iron Man, who, to us, he's very well known, but, like, you know, I kind of gauge, like, the general public, like, to my wife. If my wife knows who a superhero is, then that's, you know, that's the general public, because she doesn't go into my comic room. She doesn't read any of this stuff, and she kind of knows who Iron Man is, but not really. So if the media comes out, and even in a news story, says, well, yeah, this is a movie based on the latest comic villain from the Civil War series or something like that, it might sway the public. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, you know, it's all about the press releases and how they spin them.
Well, and again, I don't think it's swaying the public so much as the people involved in the project.
Right.
But I agree, it doesn't help them.
Right.
The biggest complaint I've had about Civil War kind of plays into this, is that I don't think they're really taking some of the key characters, like Tony Stark, and having them act in character with how they had been previously in the comics.
Well, you know what? Honestly, if you it depends on which era of Iron Man you're looking at.
I was thinking the recent one who had just gone through the whole Secretary of Defense stuff, had seen his technology misused by the government, had some distrust issues with the government, and now suddenly, you know, he's you know, best friends with him?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, you do have a point there, actually. I was thinking to myself, like, does this play into Secretary of Defense? But then as you refresh my memory about that series itself, I'm like, yeah, that really doesn't...
That was kind of, again, one of the reasons why I didn't love the first issue of the series, is that this is a very plot-driven story. It's not character-driven, which what I mean is, you know, it's not based on how we've gotten to know what these characters would act like, necessarily. Right. Miller came with a very specific idea of what he wanted to do, mm-hmm. and uses the characters in a way that fit his story, not the other way around. Because I'm okay
with that kind of storytelling. It just seems that they're going and doing, putting characters in positions that, one, I don't think they ought to be in, and two, that they wouldn't react the way they're having them react.
Where's the issue where Tony Stark dates Emma Frost? I want to read that.
That will be in Civil War Love Confession, the sequel that will come out eventually.
Yeah, ultimately in 2007, every Marvel title will have Civil War something based on it.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the Civil War. Why on earth are they going to tie Moon Knight into Civil War? Does he finally leaves the house?
He's still in the house. He just watches TV and sees the whole Spider-Man thing a few times.
Well, white costume Moon Knight is going to be with Captain America, but silver costume Moon Knight is going to be with Iron Man.
There you go. Perfect sense.
He'll be busy running back and forth throughout the battle. It's very confusing.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. Well, I think this is as good a time as ever
to
wrap things up here. Exactly. On that note, first of all, guys, I certainly want to thank you for joining us with this. This was a hell of a lot of fun. And actually, before we wrap things up, Wayne, you got any thing coming up on the Geek Pastor podcast?
Yeah, too many things. No, I've got now that I've made my move, my trek. We're going to start season two of the Geek Pastor podcast, and I do another one. It's The Adventures of Wayne and Tina, which is me and my wife, and there's going to be a third one that's just going to be strictly comics and entertainment focused. That's going to be called Radio Wayne. You can find all that stuff at geekpastor.com.
Man, I heard that somebody dies in the premiere episode of that. Is that true?
Well, not only does somebody die, but you're not even going to get that issue for about another 3 months. So,
and of course,
that's
delaying my podcast for another couple of years. So
that's it.
Yes. And David. I had to, buddy. David, if you're listening, come on. I had to, man. You know I do. John, so your podcast comes out in 2012.
At the earliest. Scheduling problems. What can I say? You know, the idiot doing it, which would be me, of course, you know, just doesn't do anything. So
he's got a terminal illness that just came up today.
No, it came up a couple years back, but it'll keep going, seriously.
Yeah, it's called laziness, actually. No, I kid.
No, that's one of the symptoms.
I got you. Coughing, sneezing, runny nose, so you can get better medicine.
Something like that.
Zing.
And well, anyway, speaking of which, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, it's been fun.
You're plenty of fun talking to, as always, and I would certainly love to have you back again.
I'd enjoy it. I love these discussions. They're great.
Excellent. And Matt, also, thank you very much for joining us, and you'll probably be back more often than not, as I heard that David talked to you over in Chi-Town about possibly being on.
Oh, I heard something about that. I don't know.
Well, we'll talk to you off air about that
a
little bit, because I'm looking for a position. I don't feel like going on the Craigslist to find it, so... Yeah, I mean, other than that, that pretty much wraps things up here. So let me go through the usual things. Well, first of all, Wayne, what's your email address again? So if anybody wants to contact...
All the hate mail to geekpastor@gmail.com.
Excellent. Fantastic. And also some love there. Come on. Not
true, true. Email. Just some love. Not too much love. That could get weird.
that's for another podcast for another time.
That was the secret fourth podcast that we don't know.
The fourth one, which is Uncomfortable Love by
Pastor Weekly After Dark.
Geek Pastor Love Line. Oh, beautiful. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at comicgeekspeak.com/forum, which are graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys. And don't forget to listen to episode 14, which came out right before this one, obviously, where Peter Rios joins us for a discussion on comic geekdom in general. And don't forget to check out the next episode, which will be our 22 pages, Annihilation Number 1. So anybody who hasn't picked up Annihilation Number 1, who wants to do so to join in on the fun, please do so. It'll be Darth Kramer and possibly a couple others joining us for that, so it should be a lot of fun. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Don't forget to vote for us at Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. And don't forget to give us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. Once again, there's only one listing for Comic Timing now, so all the confusion is long gone. So the one that says David Price, comic Ian Levinson is the one that you should look for. And that's pretty much it. So once again, guys, thank you so kindly for joining me.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Yeah.
Anytime.
It's been fun.
Excellent. That gives me a time to take a breath before I say, there's always time for comics. And now we
thank God.
No, just need like a cool little outro sound or something there.
Oh, dude. Well, I've got my music playing at the end there, probably with one or two
fingers. Okay. Like that, so I was gonna say it some kind of like, something like that.
Well, just do that.
That is copyright around comics, man. Come on. It's totally copyright around comics. I don't want to be stealing anything.
I don't know about that. Man, so you're one of those stereotypical guys that we're talking about who are living in the basement, the comic fans.
Actually, you'll love this, actually. I'm pretty much living in a pantry.
Oh, okay.
My gosh.
Yeah, I've lived most of my life, like, literally right next to the refrigerator, so it's kind of interesting.
So at night you need that nice hum to go to sleep?
Dude, exactly. Yeah. I've fallen asleep to the hum of the refrigerator my entire life. When I move out of here, I'm going to have like a mini fridge in my room.
Man, so that sounds like something out of Oliver Twist or something.
Or a Brooklyn apartment, either way.
Or Harry Potter, you know.
Exactly, there you go.
That's it.
Poor Ian lives under the crawlway.
What he didn't tell you is it's not even his fridge. It's the magic fridge.
Crap, that's my neighbor's fridge. What the hell are you talking about? Yeah. I live in a crawl space, goddamn it.